at the core of the brand, they have to be, they have to look at themselves and say, what's our purpose? What are we here for? Are we, do we cover the news so that we can make money, or do we make money so we can cover the news? And then in covering the news, what's our goal in covering the news? Ultimately, you gotta peel the onion so that it's to make our community a better place. And then when you're evaluating what you do, it's like, oh, how is this gonna serve our community? Sometimes celebrating community successes is the best way to serve, or sometimes pointing out ugliness is a way to serve your community. But doing all of one or all of the other is no way to serve your
Welcome to the News Nirvana Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. The News Nirvana Podcast features conversations with media professionals from across the country, highlighting our ever-evolving business models and showcasing the strong and effective journalism produced each and every day. This podcast is made possible to you by the generosity of Blox Digital. Blox Digital empowers content producers to connect with their worldwide audiences at scale and continuously transform to achieve their business goals. Contact Blox Digital today to learn more about how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com. Hello and welcome back to the News Nirvana Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. I'm joined today by Bob Rose. Bob, 30 plus years with the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I'll swallow my comments. I'm a lifelong Kansas City guy, so you know I have a little bit of a little bit of the competition going. But you've had a long career, you stretching from sports to news management to digital content management. So I'm curious too, just to chat with you a little bit about kind of your history in our industry and what you're thinking of it. But welcome to the program.
Thanks to have me, Nick. It's great to be here. You said 30 years. It actually goes back a lot further than that. My father was had a Globe Democrat route in St. Louis. And I remember actually being on the truck, helping deliver him the day the men landed on the moon and the day after the Ali Frazier fight, which is 1971.
Wow.
So, yeah. And throughout high school, I worked on newspaper routes. So I always, even when I was editor or reporter working, always had a sentimental place in my heart for deadlines and meeting deadlines, because I knew what those guys in the trucks waiting at the 905 for the papers to arrive, what it meant to be late. So had a sensitivity towards deadline, but also a passion towards print journalism that went way back.
That's, you know, I think we all in the industry, we all kind of have the, I remember where I was at when, right? You know, whatever the major events was, you know, I always tell people that my proudest professional moment was working 9/11, was putting the news out that day. You know, many of us collect newspapers, but that's a cool memory to remember. You remembered you and your dad delivering those front pages. That's a cool memory.
Yeah. And you talk about those milestone moments. And I was thinking of reflecting on a couple of those. Okay, I'm going to rub a little St. Louis sports in when McGuire hit, broke the home run record with 70 home runs in 98. People were literally lined around the building to buy newspapers, buy a bundle at a time. And I use the word literally. I mean, there was a line around a block around the newspaper to buy the copies, and you know, just to see how that reflected a community. And then I think about 9/11. I think probably, Nick, you were like me, working that day kind of helped you cope with it a little bit more. Like you felt like you were doing something, right?
Yeah. And I will tell, when I've told the story before, it didn't really, the personal hit didn't come until the next morning, because you know, I know it's cliche, but we do flip a little switch and we produce the news.
Right. I did have one moment where I saw the personal hit the newsroom immediately. And there was a story. There were these two missing Missouri boys. One of them was Sean Hornbeck, who'd been missing for many years. And you know, the sad cases of these missing children where they just become, their faces become kind of burned in your memories and you feel like you personally know them. And it was a January day, not like what we're having here, snow and freezing right. and just cold. And we were having our Saturday news meeting and this other boy, Ben Ownby, had gone missing a day or two. And one of like the most hardened, grizzled news veterans in our newsroom, his name was Patrick Gowan. He was the crime editor. He comes into the news meeting where we're talking about, oh, another snow day front page or something like that. And he goes, they found Ben Ownby. And if the sources are true, they found Sean Hornbeck as well. And everybody's face just dropped. And there was a second of like, oh my gosh, what do we do? What kind of, and it was, and then adrenaline kicks in and all the right genes, but just be in that one room with people and experiencing it was amazing. And it's sort of one of the things I think sometimes you miss in the disjointed newsrooms right now of remote work and things like that is just seeing some of these veterans in action and going about their job.
Yeah. There's a lot to be said for that. And then too, that moment of when it does kind of cross paths, because you're a part of the community you're covering. And so sometimes those stories do really just hit home and it takes a second. Like you allow it. And when you're as a group, you just allow that to happen. And then you kick in, how are we going to tell this story?
Right. Right.
How do we package this story together? You came up through my producer Cherry's lurking in the background while we're talking here, and she teases me because I always say my favorite and best writers, reporters come from sports. Because I think you learn to cover everything when you're doing sports, and you learn, you brought this up earlier, you learn the importance of deadlines very, very quickly.
Right. And
I think when I look around at the people that covered these big events, that have covered 9/11, that have covered kidnappings and missing children, like you just, these big stories, some of the best stuff has come from those sports writers who filled in.
That's true. And because they go in with a certain flexibility, a way that they can see the story can change on a dime. They're sort of not flustered by that as well. That said though, I've seen, and I think of a couple people in particular, amazing breaking news reporters who can just multitask at the same way. And I was like, ooh, I wonder what they would be like in this environment. the other thing about sports is when they go, okay, this is going to be a little controversial, I think, but with the sports reporters, you sort of know who they are, who he or she is writing the story. And you know, sort of over time, what kind of baggage they bring to it. And, we strive to be impartial, but we aren't impartial. Humans aren't impartial beings. So just coming at it with a certain fairness and being transparent about whatever you're bringing to the story. And I think that's why people maybe relate to sports right now as one of the great unifiers. It's why this big money is paid for live sports coverage. People, networks, the money realizes the tentpole for our society, right or wrong, has become sports. I'm sure nothing's pulling Kansas City together more than the Chiefs right now, right?
Yeah, the last several years of that. And in 2015, after 40 years of nothing on the baseball side of things, right? Yeah. But no, I like what you're saying there. I think you're right. I heard somebody say several years ago on a different news podcast about how, a lot of the narrative now talking against news and news people, how a lot of that can be traced back to the fact that we don't know our local reporters like we used to. Because, whether it's our news staffs have shrunk, newspapers aren't there anymore. All the various reasons, but I think you're right. When it comes to sports, you do get to know that, you feel like you know that writer, that reporter, a little bit better because everybody's going to read it.
Right, and I think we're sort of segueing to also a kind of a new breed for news reporters that it used to be I wrote the story, 30, end of story. I'm done. I've filed it. Go to the copy desk. You do whatever you're going to do with it. Put your headline on it. And now we're finding out, or if a reporter is doing their job the right way, that reporting of the story, I think of it as about, oh, a third of the way or a two thirds of the way through the whole reporting process. There's, okay, I've written this story, but how am I going to be sure that anybody's going to read it? How am I going to share it? People now, and we could do a whole News Nirvana on commenting, but people expect to be able to comment and interact with your stories. As a reporter, what do you do with that? What new information? How do you take part in the conversation that follows your story? And what do you do to create future stories off of it? So it's no longer just, I report it, there's the mic drop. Good. That's sort of like, if you think about the reporting as just the beginning of the process and the community conversation and then getting involved with it, in some ways that's sort of mirroring a little bit of what sports does all along, right?
Yeah, and I would say, and I think we're gonna shift in. I think you're real easily into some of that talking about the digital things, but I think that's part of it. I think it was an easier switch for sports people just because they're naturally already involved in interacting. But you know, you just said the reporting is the first part of the whole process, that first story. But because we have so many different channels and mediums to deliver stories. And because of the interaction through social media, right? You as a reporter, you have to have a presence out there on whatever, whether it's Facebook, Twitter/X, Instagram, whatever, right? You have to be a presence out there, and that interaction creates almost a sub brand from the paper to the reporter. And I know it's scary, but I guess my question is, based on what we've just been talking about, does that bring back, I guess, the trust and the relationship with readers and news consumers? Because you can do the follow-up story, or you can do, here's the report, here's the context in a different version. And also, we're just going to get to know, we're going to interact back and forth because of social media, because of commenting.
Well, I think you're right in that it can bring back the trust for, potential to bring back the trust for individual reporters. And I think it's a bigger step to bring back the trust for institutions. You know, I think the one-on-one, I had a reporter from a paper that I'm not going to mention, but they were a little frustrated. They were like, oh man, I just feel like it's kind of rudderless. I don't know what I'm doing here. And I was like, are they leaving you alone? And they go, yeah, that's kind of the problem. And I'm like, well, build your own brand. You can, nobody's stopping you from trying X, Y, or Z and being all that you want to be. There's nobody getting in the way. So like I said, you can see reporters building that, but then for brands to build it, it has to be a collection of those reporters that embrace that. And it's gotta be, at the core of the brand, they have to look at themselves and say, what's our purpose? What are we here for? Are we, do we cover the news so that we can make money, or do we make money so we can cover the news? And then in covering the news, what's our goal in covering the news? Ultimately, you gotta peel the onion so that it's to make our community a better place. And then when you're evaluating what you do, it's like, oh, how is this going to serve our community? Sometimes celebrating community successes is the best way to serve, or sometimes pointing out ugliness is a way to serve your community. But doing all of one or all of the other is no way to serve your
community. I think
I think a newsroom that has a news organization that has a platform built on discovering truth, but also listening and interacting to its audience is a way of building that trust. If you're just reporting it and not showing people that you're hearing what they're saying, either their complaints or their applauds, I don't think you will build that trust.
I'm curious on that. You kind of did the, are we doing the news to make money, or are we making money to be able to do the news? And I'm wondering if we are more in a point now than we were even just 20 years ago, let alone 30, 40, 50 beyond. Right. If we're more at a point now where the answer is we can do both at the same time, and it might make us better.
That's a good point.
I mean, we were for so long, and I always use the brick wall analogy. We for so long, it was editorial is miles of separation to advertising side. And we can't do that anymore because our staffs aren't what they used to be. But right. I think, aren't we at a point now where we realize that we've got to work more together, that's there's got to be interaction between the two sides, and we have to trust our audience to be smart enough and engaged enough. We have to be willing to engage them, I guess is better, engaged enough that they can understand.
Right. You're right. And it's, that's a good example. So we're working with some advertisers and some grocery stores about, the challenge as the weekly shopping flyers go away, and how do we do, difficult to replace, not, I would say almost impossible to replace apples to apples for a revenue bucket,
Right. There's no new age version of that.
Right. But how can we make the shopping experience or them presenting their shopping news more enjoyable or more palatable or more interesting? So guess what we were grabbing? A lot of the news tools that we were using, from some of the Night Lab stuff as a way to do interactive maps or timelines or sliders or things like that. Like I said, as long as you're transparent, this is brought to you by your grocer, or your grocer is saying this, people are smart enough to get that. In fact, I think they kind of expect that now. It's not like we're saying in our news stories, this story is brought to you by the newsroom.
Right.
but I think when you can tell some people are trying to trick people, and you can tell sites that are just clicky and spammy, and you think you're going to get one thing and you get another. But I think as long as you're just very straightforward in the promotion of it and the delivery of it, you're right. We got to use those news tools to help advertisers. And guess what? Some of those advertising marketing tools to help newsrooms get their message across as well, to identify audiences.
Yeah, I think part of that is we talked about building back trust, but I think we have to show our trust in the news consumer as well, and not try to be so standoffish. I mean, we are as an industry, we're pretty egotistical people, right? I mean, we know what we do, we believe what we do is important, and it is. But I think we have to do a better job of bringing them along.
Right. One of the things, this was an editing exercise that we used to do a long time ago, and I've started doing it with some of the new clients at Align Simple, where I'm working now with a bunch of different sites. We would, as we brainstorm stories, we would ask newsroom staffers, what's a question that you have in your personal life that you're trying to figure out, as big as am I saving enough for retirement, or as little as where am I going to park if I go downtown for lunch today? And, you just whiteboard those stories and you'd go okay, which of these are topics that we could answer? And okay, we'd take one obvious one and one ridiculous one, the parking one. Okay. What are sub questions about that? And, sometimes every once in a while, if you sort of do a reset and approach your beats like that, what are questions that people are answering? Instead of a lot of reporting is, I've got this in my notebook right now, and I'm dying to let that see the light of day. and we do this as part of SEO training, because guess what? Your stories are going to be search engine optimized because they're going to be doing the topics that people are asking about and seeking in search. Also, it sort of eliminates some of your ego because guess what? Sometimes you can explore those stories and the answer is, we don't know. It depends, blah, blah, blah. And that's an okay story to write. You know, yes. A full examination that comes out with, we don't know. And I once had an editor who says, never use a question headline unless you can answer the question. I'd say, nah, that's not right. You can use a question headline even if you don't answer the question. If you explore it fully, fair game.
I think the importance there is to if you are honest about why you can't answer the question.
Right.
You know, information doesn't exist yet. Or right. This is too early in the process. Whatever. Right.
The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Blocks Digital. Blocks Digital empowers content producers to connect with their worldwide audiences at scale and continuously transform to achieve their business goals. Contact Blocks Digital today to learn more about how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at blocksdigital.com.
I like what you're saying, though, about going to audience a little more, or maybe a lot more, for your stories and your story topics and your ideas. Whereas, you know, it used to be you had your beat and you'd go to the beat and collect things. You know, if you're a city writer, you know, you're going to go to your meetings, you're going to go to your sources, and then you're going to come out of those. And here's my 7 lists of things I want to chase in the next couple weeks. But maybe that's not what your audience is looking for.
Right. Right. I find this a lot of times in sports coverage too, is, the Kansas City Star does a great job of this, is that, among other things, is they have a reporter who I don't think watches the game from the press box at all, but reports from the TV. And so they'll report on something that happened that maybe was talked about on TV that wasn't so big in the press box and didn't happen in the post-game interview and wasn't in the press notes. So whether it's Andy Reid's frozen mustache or something like that, you know.
How does he? I don't know that we needed that many shots of frozen snot rockets, right. But
anyway, it just approaches it from a different, like, I bet people are talking about this kind of subject approach to a game. I mean, you definitely need the X's and O's, the analysis, but come in with something different like that. I think answering questions is a good
one. For a while, and especially in sports, and I think even in the political beats, because unfortunately we treat covering politics like sports. I don't know if we're doing this as much anymore, but for a while there was also a reporter who would watch the social feeds.
Right.
To pull, here's what people are talking about.
Right. And that's...
I don't know if we're pulling away from that now or if it's just not as much.
So I'm going to get a little personal bias here, but even when we're coaching newsrooms at Align Simple about potential for audience, we acknowledge social and there's a lot of work to be done there, but we tend towards email as a great way of growth. And in the whole social area, especially with X, it's just, and even with Meta a little bit, it just sort of, you can't control what's going on out there anymore. And messaging can be bought and sold a lot easier. And so I think rather than just giving a megaphone for what's going on X or letting readers vent anonymously on there, it's sort of like, okay, they've identified a topic that really has some merit, you know? And if they do that, and if there's 20 or 30 people talking about it, you go like, oh yeah, this is interesting. This is good. But rather than just amplifying a megaphone, I'm a little bit less interested in that. And I am speaking with a highly personal bias there.
I understand that. And let me ask you this then, because the difference, you said you've been focusing and pushing, organizations that you work with, and I'm going to come back. I skipped over your current work with Align Simple. Okay. So I'll come back to that, so that we can talk a little bit about what you're doing now, but on that note of you've been pushing email a little more, people to use email, how do you make up account for the fact that you can't really interact on email as the same way you can with social media channels.
Good point. It doesn't have the urgency. That's for sure. The thing I like about email is in some ways it feels more personal. It's my inbox. I don't know about you, but it takes a long time for me to delete an email after I signed up for it. I mean, I will let them back up for years and years and years. And
well, I think some of that is guilt for me, right? Like, I don't want them to unsubscribe from mine, so I'm not unsubscribing from theirs.
And it hit me one day, and Dave Matter for the Post-Dispatch did just, you know, one of the most awesome beat writers that I ever worked with. He'd write a lot of volume of work, and we'd highlight Dave's best stuff in the email, right? And I think it might have come out even every day in the height of football season. And a reader called up one time and he said, I get the Mizzou Matters email, the Mizzou Daily email. And I happened to notice a story on the website that wasn't in the email. And for this reader, the email was his entire consumption. This was his homepage. And it really made me think there are a lot of people acting like that, that the email is their new homepage. So when I think about that, it's an environment that we can control. And in some ways, it's a little bit more intimate. You're right, though. It doesn't have that feedback. So I think what we have to do with social is, if we're going to use that for the back and forth, almost put a fence around it, or figure out a way to almost treat it like office hours or a live chat give and take with a reporter, that I'm going to be here from noon to 2 on a Tuesday afternoon, and I'm going to talk about my beat, and we can interact through this either live chat function that we have through Arena or some other device, or I'm going to do it through my Facebook feed, because otherwise, being on there is just thankless. It's gut-wrenching. It's soul-sucking. and I think to be able to be on there for a brief amount of time and to be able to hopefully have a meaningful back-and-forth dialogue would be one approach to take. And the other approach is to do it through the story comments and things like that. But 24/7 social on as a meaningful feedback channel, that's a tough one for me to take.
I think that's a good point in are we replacing meaningful interaction with just immediate and constant interaction? And I think that's a good thing to consider. I am curious how the obvious question is monetization, but also, how do we, if readers are using the newsletters as their homepage, right? That's where they're living to consume our news. How do we utilize that to make sure we're A, getting them all the information we should be getting them,
right?
And keep them in our sphere of influence, if you will,
right?
And how do we make money?
Well, it's funny. Some of the organizations were almost serving more ad impressions through their email newsletters than they were through their website.
Wow. You
know, at least in certain channels, that was a possibility. Wow is my remark too. It speaks to just like the prevalence of mobile and the potential audience from email. So I'm not saying that was widespread, but it was approaching, and advertisers were like, wait, is that where our opportunity is? Okay. So there's that. And, you're in the atmosphere of, okay, this is still my, I'm referring back to my content. I'm having a narrative email, but I'm sending people back to the website on occasion. But my big number when I think about analytics is I call it the yesterday number. And it's like, how many of my subscribers today were here yesterday? I want to get like a habit built up. The biggest predictor for people subscribing is not how many articles they consume. It's not how long they spent on the website. It's how many days in the 30-day window are they at your site. So you'd rather have somebody, you know, 1 minute a day for 30 days than 5 hours for one day. So, you know, if we can use email to sort of build that habit on our brand, and then, you know, the habit, then the, you're right on the technical challenges. How can I get, make sure that email is metered? How can I make sure that it's all in that ecosystem? And you know, that's one thing that, you know, Align Simple can work with, like smaller papers on is doing that. But I also know, like I've just looked at Piano and Blocks. I know like they've made a lot of strides in making sure that they're sort of platform agnostic as far as how the meter works. It's not where it needs to be, but it's getting a lot better.
I'm curious. I liked your note there about repeat, and I agree. And I've learned that in, you know, my world is mostly in the podcasting realm. And I've learned that podcast stats are like websites 25 years ago. But also I've learned that the number I care about most is I look at that. Okay, I had this many, you know, listening a week ago. What percentage of that came back?
Right.
The next week. I would rather have that consistency to be able to say, okay, I'm reaching people over and over and over. Otherwise you really don't know what you're doing if you can't look at that kind of consistency.
So you're saying you'd rather have 52 Bob Roses than one Taylor Swift?
Well, no. I don't know. Taylor comes with a different checkbook. I really like that checkbook.
Yeah, you got to have like multiple zeros to make a lot of money on podcasts, don't you?
Yeah, I mean it is a different thing. The podcast people that are getting rich with podcasts were already rich.
Okay,
they were already famous. They already had a following. You can do it, and I will say I have done. You know, my tiny little suburban Kansas City newspaper, Link to Lee Summit, has had a podcast since spring of 2016, and that is most of my content, and it's my biggest reach. But I've built that as the thing, and so locally you can make money, and you can reach an audience, but it takes a while to build up. And for me, that's just kind of the brand I've built with it. Is this is how I'm going to reach the audience, and it works in this community.
So are you doing some live reads for the local advertisers there in that one?
Yeah, we'll do. Yeah. So we'll do advertising sponsorships on those. We do some partnerships for some live event version of it as well. So that, you know, say,
yeah, it was never,
you know, we've got spring elections coming up, right? So candidate interview forums, we'll do those live at an event space.
Yeah. I was never quite sure how, the effectiveness of sponsorships on, you know, put a logo on this web channel kind of thing work. But on things like podcasts and even, you know, some videos where you can see that the personality is sort of interacting with it, I do think there's potential there.
I have taken a lot of notes from radio people, right? You almost make it like a live read. The host is almost endorsing the product or the service, the brand. They're endorsing the brand. It works that way. And we have had one sponsor since the beginning. And look, they have told me people have walked in the store because over and over and over they've heard it.
Right. And it's sort of, we go back to that at news advertising thing. And if you're a sports guy and you're recommending this tire shop, or you're doing a live read for that, I think readers are cool with that, right? They're not going to think you're going to go easy on Ollie Marmol, the Cardinals manager, because he bought his tires there, right?
Right.
And they get that. And there'll be, you know, we had a thing where back when the Rams were in town, Brian Burwell, who's a great, you know, one of the print video innovators of the time was doing a Rams broadcast, and the Rams wanted to sponsor it. And we were like, that one's not going to work. You know, that can't be the Rams today brought to you by the Rams.
Right. You know what I found with the podcast and things, and this is kind of a note maybe for other communities who are doing these with their organizations. I don't sell political ads.
Right.
And there's a couple reasons, but mostly I don't need to. My audience quadruples at a minimum during an election season.
Okay, just getting regular ROP stuff or whatever.
I want to switch gears a little bit now, and this is like, we're going to stick with the sports theme here. This is my makeup call. I left out when I introduced you, I talked about what you had done, but I left out what you're doing now, and you are now a fractional consultant. Is that the right term? With Align Simple. What is that now? What
do you do? That is a great question. First of all, I have to talk about one of a consultant that we once had when we did a redesign of the Post-Dispatch. He was a pretty feisty fellow, and he said, "I'm not a consultant, I'm an insultant. I'm also a resultant." And
I love that.
Yeah, and I was like, you definitely filled the insultant part pretty well. But I was thinking about that and, you know, talking with Kyle Rickoff at Align Simple, because when I started, I also was like, ooh, fractional specialist. What is that? And I think about freelancers who do what you tell them to do. Basically, you know, put this round peg in this round hole, right? And I think about consultants who come in and they tell you how many round holes you need to build, right? And then they kind of wash their hands and walk away. And the specialist and the fractional specialist really sort of is somewhere in between. And we really look at it as like a way to supplement your existing staff with skills that you don't have or with tasks that you're not interested in. So we'll come in and, you know, a little bit of it will be analysis of your situation. We'll recommend tools. We'll develop and train your company on those tools. And in some cases, we'll do an ongoing support of those tools, or we'll actually do those things. So when I think about it in a newsroom, and let's face it, all the newsrooms are short-staffed. They think about how they use their resources really well. And what their specialist newsrooms are is gathering the news, reporting the news, and telling the stories, right? What they are not specialist at is discovering these new platforms, figuring out the partners who are available on those platforms, figuring out the strengths and weaknesses, exploring new tools. So we can do a lot of that for these news organizations. And I say news organizations because some of them are newspapers, some of them are TV stations, some of them are just independent startup journalism efforts. And we really want to support them. So, for example, I was talking passionately about newsletters, and somebody who's in a stat newsroom of four people covering three beats goes, "Yeah, we should get into the newsletter." They don't need to do the research about potential partners. They don't need to do, what is a good welcome drip look like. They don't need to do those parts. We could advise them, we could come in and implement that for them and save them. They don't need a newsletter editor. I've seen companies who said, "Oh, we need an SEO editor." No, you don't. You need reporters and editors and photographers, you know, people who are covering the news, people who are editing that content for the platforms. If we had all the resources in the world, great, be your expert in all those things, but we don't.
Do you think that, and I'm going to, let's just say the last 20 years or so, do you think that there has been too much of a shift to the multitasking newsroom? you know, the reporter who is the SEO expert, who is the newsletter editor, who is the photographer, who is the, and all, have we stretched that too far?
I would say yes and no. I think a reporter should be able to take a video at the scene. You know, they shouldn't produce a long multimedia piece, but they should be able to take video explaining what happened or get a simple interview video. We're still encountering sites where, oh, reporters don't do the headlines. You know, so a reporter needs to be enough of an SEO expert and that they know how to write a headline on their story. So they do not need to be, I think they need to be able to take the photo, take the video, write the headline, write the summary, and then sort of like let the distribution channels work on their own, right? And I'm not going to force somebody who is not social media savvy to learn the language of Twitter or to learn, you know, I am not going to make my 35-year Jefferson City beat reporter learn how to do TikTok. You know, it just doesn't work. But what I do want them to do is like structure their beat. You know, we talk about SEO with folks and they're like, oh, I'm going to have to relearn. It's like, when you get right down to it, SEO is about doing great journalism and about doing the basics. It's about putting the names of people at the top of the stories. It's about writing with such specificity. So when the tools go in and reinforce the good journalism, that's where it really takes over. So in some ways, I think with the technical part of things, like, oh yeah, we were asking reporters to edit video on these complicated video editing platforms. No, but they should be able to figure out how far they should stand away from a subject to get a good interview question, or when they see something happening, whether it's a fire, an accident, a dog doing triple somersaults, they should know how to videotape something that looks interesting. They should be able to go into the story and think like, what is the interesting video component or visual component of it? What is the thing that people are going to want to watch, see, hear? But I think that's basic. I think that all comes down to basic reporting and presentation. But as far as like, I got to learn a new tool every day, that's nice, but give me the reporter who gets out there and gets that information. You know, our top videos each year are not the well-produced 3-minute sound over videos. It's the witness with the scene at the fire. It's the watch this blah, blah, blah thing.
Watch the dog turning somersaults.
Right. It's something to see. And another thing on that rant, and this is something I've been trying for a long time with little success. So if somebody has success in getting reporters and editors to try this, let me know. And that is write your headline before you write your story. Most of the times people write a long story and then they write the headline for it. And I think if you write the headline first, you might save yourself some really boring stories. If you go like, well, wait, that's the best headline I'm going to get out of this. Why am I writing this? So if you know, City Hall is going to meet tonight and discuss blah, blah, blah. How about here's 3 questions you can expect City Hall to raise about the new parking lot. You know, it's just good headline writing is follows good SEO, but it also makes for a good story structure on things.
I have a professor friend who teaches journalism, and he said you have to write 2 leads. That's your headline and your lead.
Okay.
Right. You just have to think like that because you've got – those are your 2 chances to catch people.
Exactly. So when you talk about selling your story, you know, and promoting it and things like that, those are the ways to do it, right? The thing that drives me crazy, and there are some very good reporters who still do this, is the pun headline, which looks kind of nice in the newspaper, I'll give you that, but all it does everywhere else is deceive, right? I mean, isn't the whole purpose of the pun?
I don't know. You're hurting my dad joke soul right now. So
we should crack a couple of those right now. But
I know I get that. And I think you're right. We are changing how we write headlines.
Right.
And that's a good thing.
Right. We don't need to. I mean, there's the ones that are groaningly clickbaitish, almost like the dad joke version of headline writing.
Right.
You won't believe what blah, blah, blah. Right.
Well, let me ask you, I kind of just to wrap this up, let me ask you kind of based on where we started the conversation today and talking about trust and our interactions with our readers and consumers and the technology and the things that we're using, do all of these things make you feel good about where we're going as an industry? Is the future so bright you got to wear shades? There you go. I did the dad joke.
Right. To me, the cloud, maybe it's the wind that's blowing in, is generative AI. And it's almost, you know, unfair to put that at the very end of the conversation.
We'll call it a cliffhanger.
Right. To be continued. Because I think it offers so much opportunity for newsrooms to free us from some of our mundane tasks. It's not there right now. It's not there for long. There are great tools about improving your headline writing, about summarizing your stories. You know, there's three or four different AI sites that I follow. Can I just give those a shout out real quick?
Sure, why not?
Yeah. One of them is the Journalist Toolbox, journalisttoolbox.ai. Mike Riley from the Google News Initiative. And if you want to find out a tool that you want to use for headline writing or image creation, Mike brings a real journalist perspective about how these work, what ethical considerations. Chris Snyder, who is a former colleague of mine at Drake, does this thing called innovationprofs.com. And I find that is a little bit more whimsical, but a little bit easier entry into some of the tools. And then I'm just-
We need some of that. We need some of the easy entry.
Right. And then youreverydayai.com. That's got a little chat GPT, heavy to bias in favor of chat GPT, but also it's the tool you need to learn. It's the tool where we need to start practicing on, writing our prompts, editing our prompts, polishing our prompts. And if we can do that with, like, say we have a set of data from our newsroom and we just enter it in there and we just start querying and having conversations and seeing what kind of results we get from that, we need to just start building those kind of muscles as a newsroom as far as better prompting, better editing of those prompts. And this Your Everyday AI is a good way to follow the news on AI and also just sort of what's going on ChatGPT. But that being said, I also think it's ominous about what's coming and the distrust of news coming in here. You know, during this election, we're going to see all kinds of video of Trump, video of Biden, video of Nikki Haley, of things that we just will not know if they can be trusted. So, you know, as your consumer of news, check out the source of it. And it's why our local news organizations, us building trust around our brand is going to be more important than ever, because at some point, that's going to be what people are going to use to divine whether this is a video that they see with their own eyes, whether they can trust it or not. Who's presenting this? Who's vetted it? And hopefully the local news organization that has their interests at heart is the organization that they're going to trust for something like this.
I think that's good. And it is good to talk caution. I will actually, this is the second episode of our new season of the 2024 season. I'm going to encourage people to go backward. If you haven't listened, there's a good episode that we did in 23 about AI.
It was great.
And what I really liked in that conversation was as you start learning the tools, because they are great tools and will be better, is before you do that, think about the rules that you want to establish and how do you want to use it? What is your process going to be? And, some people are saying, look, we're not going to use it to generate anything, but we can use it to help repurpose.
Right.
Right. So that's kind of how that organization is doing it. And thanks to Cherry. She just told me that was episode 31.
Yeah. And we've worked with newsrooms just to even sort of handhold them or take them on the journey with Mike Riley. And a couple times we've come up with, we're not doing AI. And I'm like, that's a big mistake. I mean, obviously you are not producing, your city council meetings written by AI, but for you not to learn how they can improve your headlines or what's out there or be curious about it right now is a big mistake.
Yeah. And I think, but I also like the, from that episode 31, where he talked about you can't start it in your organization with the people who are already scared and don't want to do it. You got to find that coalition of the willing. I love that phrase. Find those people in your organization that like learning these new things, that like kind of jumping in and figuring it out. Find that group and let them play around a little with it and see if they can figure out how are the tools best used for your organization so that you can maintain and keep building your trust with your audience. AI was probably the number one topic and almost it found a way into almost every episode last year. And I think it's going to stay there. We're still figuring out. And we know some organizations have run into some difficulties with it and have been caught using it ways they probably shouldn't have. But there's going to be that, but we've got it. You can't get away from it. And it is a time saver. There are ways to use it to help you do things that are going to take minutes out of other tasks.
Right. And I used to think about when the Rams were in the Super Bowl, the first year they won, they had a dark room in Atlanta. We were the only organization using film at that point. Everybody else was digital and things. And, we had some hardcore tried and true photo staffers. And just think about how much easier digital photography has made photojournalism. And, people were like, this is not going to work. Our phones are never going to replace our cameras. And okay, this is easier.
Right? Oh, it's easier. It's better. And I mean, you mentioned phones replacing our cameras. I mean, I'm sitting in my studio here and I do video and audio every day and thousands of dollars of equipment. Best camera I own right here. I mean, it's just the technology is great. Bob, I really appreciate you taking some time today. I think I know we've kind of jumped to a few yeah, back.
Can I put in a little plug for Align Simple?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because we have a lot of clients right now, and it's interesting the different ways that we're finding that we can help them, and also that we're sort of learning along the way. Some of them is TV stations with what are the right analytics for OTT. And if you're struggling, if you're a small newsroom struggling with GA4 integration, or you don't know what analytics you should be looking at, that's one where instantly we can give you help. And one editor said, I've been waiting 11 years for this answer. Well, the numbers were there. He just didn't have it in a clarified, actionable way. So, a lot of times you don't think you need help, or you think like, I don't have time to get help. Help is going to be too hard. Try, if it's not us, another fractional service person, or, talk to Mike at the Journalist Toolbox to dive in there. But we are here to help. We are all interested in seeing journalism, local journalism thrive. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's the goal for all of us. I want to ask this. If people want to connect with you, Bob, they want to follow you, how can they do that?
Bob.rose@alignsimple.com. Align Simple is one word. And I'm also at LinkedIn. Just look for Bob Rose. I'll be the Align Simple guy.
Awesome. Bob, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. I think this has been a good conversation, about where we're at in the industry and what we're looking at moving forward. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much.
that will wrap us up for this episode. We'll talk to everybody next time. The News Nirvana podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or most any of your favorite podcast apps. The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Blox Digital. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com. The News Nirvana podcast is produced by Fredcasts. Think, speak, act.